It's important to take everything that you see with a grain of salt. There's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that's gone behind the successful cases, and most of that is unsuccessful cases. A lot of the good judgment that we have comes from experience, and most of that experience has come from bad judgment.
Welcome to the Dental Head Start podcast. I'm David Keir, and this episode is packed with value. We've got the first panel interview with the Dental Head Start podcast, Dr. Bharat Agarwal, Aidan Doherty, David Attia, and a return guest, Johan Choi, who brings the banter and keeps everyone honest. These guys are just killing it on Instagram. If you've seen their work, you know what I mean. It's genuinely a pleasure seeing their cases on Instagram. The level they're hitting at such a young age is amazing. It really is. It's cool to see. So make sure you're following them on Instagram. I'm sure most of you probably are. We sit down and we get the insights from them, including their stories, how they got to where they are, the postgrad study they've done, the CPD they've done. We talk about how long it actually takes to do these posts that they do. We talk about how they learnt dentistry as well, how they focused, how they helped each other get there, how they met as well. We talk about getting feedback, being humble, and learning at your own pace, not going too fast from the beginning. We talk about jobs, we talk about the good and the bad about jobs and what they've experienced, and we talk about why they're doing what they're doing. So they spend a lot of time, you know, building these groups on Instagram to have a voice, because they have advice they want to give and they want to make an impact on the future generation of dentistry, which is awesome. It's the same mission I have, so I think these guys are really doing cool stuff. There's tons of great info in this. I have no doubt you'll enjoy it. Don't forget, there's a Prime Head Start segment at the end of each of these interviews. Today's topic is about bedding your patient. Sounds strange? It's a super helpful topic. Obviously, it is not what first comes to mind. So I think you'll enjoy that. Check it out after the interview. We're also announcing the winner of two free tickets to Prime Speak. This is Prime Practice's communication course. I've done it. I think it's awesome. It'll give you a head start in your career, no doubt. And so the winners will be announced at the end of this episode. And thank you to BOQ Specialists for their support as well. They allow us to give days of water for every single listen. So just because you're listening right now, someone else is actually getting water in a country where they need it. So that's pretty cool. And finally, I've actually got an exciting announcement about a collaboration with someone else who's podcasting. It's called Foresight Dental. You can find it at Foresight Dental. That's four as the number on Instagram and Facebook. There's more at the end of the podcast. I hope that is going to have an impact on everyone. All right, enough from me. Enjoy the interview. Being a student is pretty tough. The stresses of exams, patient care, and everyday life is enough without having financial pressures as well. BOQ Specialist recognizes this. They offer a student banking package if you're in your last 2 years of dentistry. It's a pretty good package. Actually, I used it myself. They recognize that you don't have much of an income now, but that may change. The student banking package includes a credit card and an overdraft on your account. Payments toward the overdraft aren't required until the 1st of July, the year after you graduate. Now, I'm not recommending you go out and spend this money on anything, but if you need to buy loops or if you need to get through the final year of study, they really do have your back. I know I struggled in the last year financially and it helped me. So thank you, BOQ Specialist, for supporting me in my final year and for supporting the Dental Head Start podcast. Terms and conditions apply. See boqspecialist.com.au for more details. So this episode of the Dental Head Start podcast, we've got four guys that you all would probably know from Instagram. We've got Aidan, David, Bharat, and Johan. Welcome to the podcast, guys.
It's great to be here.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
So everyone probably knows you from Instagram, and I've always wanted to ask you guys this question. You guys post some amazing cases. You post some pretty in-depth stuff as well. And I want to know, how much time does this take? Like, what do you have to do to get these cases out there? And how much time do you dedicate to it?
Do you mean David when you say you guys? Or are you talking to all of us, David?
Well, I think you all post some pretty cool stuff. But let's go with David. David, what do you do?
I guess it kind of depends on the type of cases that you're posting and what you're trying to achieve from the post. Sometimes if it's giving just an insight into a one step of a long case, those posts can be quite quick because it's just one photo. If you're posting a full protocol case, then it can take a little bit more time, and you know, you can't just kind of do it between patients or whatever. It helps when you're traveling a lot, when you're commuting to work, or you're on a fair amount of flights. But I don't know. I stepped away from it for the last couple of weeks, and it's actually kind of nice to step away from it every now and then and not get caught up of having to comment or post or respond to questions and that sort of thing. I don't know. What about you guys?
Okay. Yeah, look, I think a big part of the reason I guess I sort of commit the time to doing it is we just spent so much time talking to one another about dentistry and sending each other photos and cases and going through protocols and the way we'd sort of approach things. And I guess for me, it just felt like it would be nice for the greater sort of dental population to sort of get a little bit of insight into what we had to share. And I guess I saw a lot of stuff that was posted on social media that just had no context, no real rationale for why treatment was done, a lot of before and afters. And for me, that doesn't really sort of help progress dentistry in any way. So for me, whenever we sort of, you know, put a post together or think about putting a post, it's more about what is the learning outcome from it. What was the thought process, the rationale, what's the research behind why we did it? So I guess for me, yeah, it takes a long time to do it, but I think it's not really to show off what we can do and what we're capable of achieving. It's more about how can we help everyone else sort of, yeah, achieve the same goals or change the way dentistry is practiced or the philosophy behind how dentistry is practiced as a whole. So yeah, it takes time.
It certainly takes time. I think that's quite an admirable concept to be doing it to try to help other people. And I think that's what a lot of people want. And obviously that's why, you know, you get people following, people engaging with your content. It's definitely helping lift the bar. So perhaps there's a couple people out there that don't actually know who you guys are. Let's go through who is everyone. So let's start with you, Barrett. What do you do? Where do you practice? What's your focus?
I practice on the Gold Coast in Queensland, Australia, currently in private practice. Got a group of partners. We have three practices in total, and we sort of, you know, focus on the whole sort of general dentistry, you know, family dentistry. We do a bit of everything. My primary focus for the last few years has been restorative dentistry and primarily sort of aesthetic dentistry, and that was sort of born from I guess just sort of that passion for the arts, and then went on and did some further training to sort of, yeah, learn a little bit more about it.
What further training?
So I did the MSc in aesthetic dentistry through King's College in London. So I did that through distance, and then I did a PG dip in aesthetic and restorative dentistry with one of my mentors, Sabir Banerjee. So I guess my focus for the last few years has been sort of that aesthetic dentistry sort of, you know, area.
So I've done a podcast with Johan before, and we've talked a little bit about doing these, you know, further education in a structured context. Barrett, do you find that to be really helpful? And do you think it's something you recommend to others?
Absolutely. I think for me, I was really at that crossroads, sort of 4 years out. What am I doing? Where am I heading? What's next for me? I sort of just felt like general dentistry was amazing, and that's what I wanted to do. And I didn't really want to go and specialize. So for me, it meant giving me structure, giving me something that guided my learning. You know, up until then, it was just, yeah, read an article here and there, learn something. But all of a sudden, having that guided journey, having mentors, having peers that were on that same journey definitely allowed me to sort of progress a lot quicker and also understand things a lot better. So I think a lot of it is, yeah, you don't know what you don't know until you start doing things like this. So any sort of postgraduate training, whatever, you know, whatever it is and in whatever format it is, I don't think there's anything to lose by doing that.
Yeah, that's awesome. You don't know what you don't know. It's a really cool comment. I think it's so important. So, David, what's your story?
So I graduated from Griffith in 2013. I spent some time in Melbourne and Townsville before finally moving back to Sydney earlier this year. Sydney's home for me. I've been in private practice since I graduated, and I've been fortunate enough to have the opportunity to work with a lot of mentors who kind of shaped the way I, the direction that I headed in. So I did have a key interest in ortho when I first graduated, and I spent some time doing a postgrad diploma in ortho. But ultimately, I did want to get into a bit more surgery, and that's where my passion sort of lies. So I am doing a little bit more of that type of work now, but I still do a lot of general dentistry. I enjoy the multidisciplinary approach to dentistry. We were chatting about this earlier. So I think in private practice, you get a lot of cases that come in that do really require that treatment planning approach from multiple facets of dentistry, and that's what I enjoy.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's a lot of us don't want to specialize because we enjoy the multifaceted and multidisciplinary approach. So it's pretty cool. Aidan, what's your story?
Well, I suppose I've got a fairly similar story to David. I graduated out of the four of us the most recently in 2014. And I went into private practice and I've done a couple of courses afterwards, the postgraduate orthodontic one that David did as well. And recently I just finished up my implant diploma at Sydney, which has been really good. Yeah. So I found that the structured learning and the focus on literature and evidence-based to be a big advantage over your weekend courses or your short courses and things like that. So I have a couple of general practices that I'm a partner in, and you know, it's a balance between trying to run businesses and obviously trying to further yourself as a dentist. But it's not just about putting your shingle on the wall anymore and people walking in the door. So I suppose for us, you know, we want to be the best dentists we can, but we also have to have some business acumen and understanding, and that's been a journey itself over the past 4 years for me.
Yeah, for sure. And that's actually something that, Johan, when we had the podcast a couple of months ago, we covered a fair bit, you know, covering business and study and doing the best dentistry you can. So, Johan, do you want to just quickly cover your story if people didn't listen to that episode?
Well, we should just redirect them to that one then. Hey, David.
I suppose it only had about...
Because there was a whole episode by itself,
only
right? Only
had 10 listings anyway, so...
So how did you guys all meet up? Like, you guys are now a bit of a group that's really doing a lot of good dentistry out there and pushing the boundaries. How did you meet up? How did this become?
I think this is David Matias, like, time to shine. He loves telling the story.
So Johan owns a van, right? Look, we met through social media. I think the one person that I'd met prior to the four of us getting together was Bharat. Since I graduated, Bharat was probably 3 or 4 years ahead of me, and we kind of connected towards the end of my degree. And he was probably one of the guys that early on was somebody that I could turn to and ask for help with cases and that sort of thing. And he's been probably one of the most influential in my career. And I think in around 2016, I got a message from this creep on Facebook, Johan, and the first thing he said to me wasn't, "Hey, how you going? Have you know, who are you?" and that sort of thing. It was, "Let's plan your move back to Sydney." So we kind of connected on online, and he then introduced me to Aidan, and the four of us somehow ended up in a group chat that's been running for, what, 3 years now, Aidan?
Yeah, it's weird, hey? Like, I think, Johan, did we meet at a course, like, yeah, 3 or 4, probably 3.5, 4 years ago?
So Aidan and I met in real life first at a course. It was like a business course, right, Aidan?
Yeah.
You and I were both pretty young practice owners. Somehow we stumbled across, and I was going, "Who's this white guy next to me?" And, you know, never in my wildest dreams did I, you know, did I think I would have such a good looking white friend. Huh?
Blessed.
Yeah, but I think the biggest thing was, I guess we've all aligned because we've got very similar interests and, you know, similar motivations. But I think it was, you know, I think the story really was, Aidan had this idea of, you know, of building a platform for young dentists. And then he was telling me about this idea, and I was sort of, was one of those moments where I looked at him and said, "You know what? I've had the exact same idea." And then he sort of said, "Oh, okay, well, you know, who else do you think we can add on to build this?" And then, you know, I think it's the power of social media and your personal persona and, you know, showing, you know, being genuine in public as well, because the first people who came to mind were probably not people that I knew in real life, but it was, I saw this guy, David Attia, you know, doing this, you know, awesome work up in Townsville. And then, you know, Bharat was doing his master's at that time, I think, and he'd posted this case. I still remember it vividly. I know Bharat's cases so well, you know, probably his whole portfolio of cases. But Bharat put this case up where he was doing these two posterior onlays, and he went to the extent of doing this little acrylic jig to mark in exactly where he wanted this crack line on the buccal surface of a ceramic. Complete overkill, you know? But you think, who is this psycho? Like, absolute psycho. And I thought, hey, Aiden wants good young dentists on board, so we should get all the psychos together, you know, to truly sort of create a movement, create a culture. But, I think we were sort of, we all met weirdly through social media and somehow we've become friends in real life as well.
Yeah, clearly you guys, you get along really well. You inspire each other. Do you think, obviously early on, you guys were pushing each other to get better? Was the group aspect of this one of the things that have brought you to where you are?
Most definitely. I think, I think each of us have improved so rapidly since meeting each other. I look back at a lot of my cases. I think I've been influenced by each of the other three boys in different ways. But I look back at my work from 3 years ago and I look at my work now and even at little different sort of milestones during that period, and it's sort of scary how fast you do improve. But I think, we always talk about the fact that, I think all of this has really been possible by who we've been surrounded with, because we do spend so much time talking to each other and sharing cases and that sort of thing.
Do you think that comes from, you guys look at each other's work and talk about work? Is it you guys pushing each other, or is it you pushing yourself to kind of keep up and that keeps the bar raising?
I think it's really pushing yourself. I think I sort of look at what the boys are doing and get confident. Like I wake up in the morning, you know, elevate today, what's it I'm going to hit to be that bit better? Because when you see everyone growing around you and doing great things, I think it's hard not to be inspired to go, hey, how can I be the best, version of what I can attain and achieve? Because when you're developing, then, I think that's part of what we have, is that sort of level of collegiality. Like we are so genuinely happy to see each other succeed. Not like, don't get down, but I don't look at this on my reps or, Aiden's insane planning or David's ridiculous surgical skills and go, oh my God, I feel terrible about my own dentistry. It's about, okay, well, how am I going to be better today and, fulfill what my potential is? So I think that's a key, and that's why social media can be so challenging. But I think that's what sort of brought us together, is the fact that we just don't see it like that. I personally don't see it like that whatsoever.
Yeah, yeah. It's helping each other and it's enjoying each other's successes. It's not putting yourself down. I think a lot of young graduates come out, they look at, work like you guys and feel like, why is my work not that good? But I guess it's the other way of looking at it, which is, that can push us to be better, and it's actually a really good thing. It's definitely raised the bar.
But I think we've all been there, even prior to social media, if you speak to my wife, she'll tell you stories of, I graduated 2010, 8 years ago, going, oh my God, there's this dentist, Tony Rotondo. He's phenomenal at what he does. He's so good. I'm never going to be this good. And I get really down about it. I get really upset. I'd be like, oh my God, my feelings don't look like this. And I guess just as you sort of do more of it, you just realize that people like that have put so much work into it, and they're so much further ahead in their career, that it's not something to be down about, it's something to push yourself and go, it's aspirational, it should be aspirational. So I think even prior to social media, those influences really existed, but it's all about just your mindset and how to change that. And I think it's hard when you're a new grad, because you sort of graduate and you think you know everything and that you should know everything and then you should be as good as everyone else. Mm. But that's really not the case. Now I sort of look at it even more pragmatically and go, okay, hey, I feel like I'm further away from being as good as, someone like Tony Rotondo will ever be, but the drive is greater than it was ever before. It's almost, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's hard being a new graduate. Yeah.
It certainly
is. I think following on from what Barrett was saying is that because there is that genuine desire for each other to improve, there's no holding back when it comes to helping someone improve. When one of us shares a case, it's not about sugarcoating and praising every single time. Praise is given when it's due, and then when there's room for improvement, we're the first to kind of put our hand up and say, I think you did a great job, but you probably should have done this, or maybe look at it from this point of view. And we know that it's not coming from a position of jealousy or a position of hatred or whatever. It's really coming from a position of, mate, I want you to get better. I think, the potential is there for you to improve, and it really does keep you on your toes, because, if we're aiming to be better than what we were yesterday, we need those people in our lives who are going to give us those tough to swallow pills and tell us, I don't think you should have approached it this way, or, you did well. How did you come up with this idea? And that way we can learn from each other when things do go correctly or when things don't go as well as we sort of planned.
Mm. It's something that not everyone is able to accept that kind of feedback? Were you guys all very open to feedback from the start and, you know, like ready to learn? Do you think that's part of your attitude for all of you, or do you think you had to kind of learn that? Because there's definitely people who graduate and they struggle to hear feedback.
I've never really been good at, I wasn't very good at receiving feedback at the beginning, and it's been something that I've had to come to terms with. You know, I think I touched upon this in my sort of other podcast with you, David, but I graduated thinking I was, you know, God's gift to dentistry. You know, and you soon get found out that that's, you know, definitely not the case. So one of the things was where, you know, I found it very confronting when older dentists who, you know, I think some of them didn't come from a good place, but, you know, when I was hearing them say bad things about my work at the time, you know, I didn't take it very well. But now looking back on it, I think it was just a process of, you know, of coming to terms with that, and being able to, you know, being able to receive feedback properly and learn from those experiences there.
That's good to hear, and that perhaps that'll resonate with some of the audience, because I personally think it's a really important thing, but we all know it's pretty hard to hear negative feedback about your work, especially when you're working on a patient, a person. So it's an interesting thing to come to terms with, for sure.
I think it's important that you find these people who can, as David said, give you that feedback as well. And everyone will, you know, come from a different place, but eventually you'll hopefully find people which can give you the feedback which you can take on board. Because a lot of social media these days, you'll see people just patting each other on the back, and it's almost like everyone is just being so super positive, and there's no real honesty sometimes. That's what I feel like I see sometimes, and I feel like, you know, I almost feel sorry for these people because they don't have people like David, Johan and Brad to actually, you know, within their close group to give them feedback and help them. You know, being the least experienced out of any of these guys here, they've helped me a lot. You know, they'll tell you what's good, but they'll tell you what's bad. And I think you need people like that. I think that's very important. And you have to learn to be able to deal with that feedback as well in a positive manner, not take it negatively.
Yeah, for sure. I've definitely noticed what you're saying, that there's a lot of patting on the back in social media, and I'm not sure that's helping certain people. How do you think that could change? Do you think it could change, or do you think that's just an inherent problem with social media?
Well, I think everyone, you know, to be frank, I think everyone's just trying to save face, and no one wants to look like the dickhead saying negative comments. But, you know, at the end of the day, if some of the work isn't great, and if things can improve, you know, we all just need to say it in a way that's respectful, but and hope that the person on the other end of it can take the feedback. But obviously some of us don't want to say that maybe sometimes because we don't really know those people that well on a personal level. We don't know how they're going to take the feedback. So it's a bit of a tricky one. What do you boys think?
I think when people ask me stuff, you know, privately, I'm pretty blunt with my feedback. You know, I don't really sugarcoat things, but I have found that over time, you know, I hope that they, you know, people, you know, perhaps there might be people out there who've been offended by what I've had to say about their, you know, about their approach to doing the work. But I hope they, you know, they can understand that it's coming from a good place. Because what I've found is that some of the best feedback that I've been given in the past has been when people have absolutely ripped into my work. And then, look, you're down for a day or two, but then you think, hey, you know, they had a point and I've really got to come back and, you know, make sure my next case is better. So, you know, I think everyone gives feedback in different ways. And, you know, I guess it comes down to that method of learning, doesn't it? You know, everyone, you know, some people like to be babied, some people can take the harsh truth. So I guess that's why you need to surround yourself with people who are, you know, who are like-minded, and are actually going to be sort of, you know, are going to give you that environment that's conducive for sort of improvement and learning.
So I think, I agree with that completely. I think, the fact that there's so much positivity on social media right now is a great thing. Cause I mean, social media is synonymous with negativity and people being put down, bullying, whatever. Like, that's a big part of it, and that's a huge problem. And exactly what you said before, David, you know, people are treating patients, they don't want to feel bad about not only their clinical ability, but they don't want to feel like they've let someone down. So I think it's not so much that social media needs to change. I think people or clinicians need to start understanding that they can't learn dentistry from social media. The people that they look up to on social media aren't actually there to educate them or teach them. And I guess, going back to what I said at the start, you know, providing context and providing evidence for, you know, when we post and what we post, things, that's part of our sort of giving ourselves some validity in sort of, you know, putting ourselves out there. But I think people need to look beyond social media for mentors and people to help them and look up to and get feedback from. And I think that's what we've all been lucky to have, you know, beyond even our groups. We have clinicians who've been doing this for years and years and years, whether it's through like our education or whether it's through people we've met or people we've worked for that have shaped and guided us. So for us, we haven't learned dentistry from social media. We've learned it from, like, it's been from people who've done this for years and who have that sort of, you know, runs on the board to teach us. So I think it's not so much social media needs to change. It's our perception of social media and what we're trying to get out of it that needs to change. I think new grads shouldn't look to social media to learn how to do it.
I think that's a really good point, and I'm glad you brought that up. Barrett, do you have any suggestions on how to find those mentors for people who are coming out? You know, you're coming out, you're finding a job, you're not really sure even where you're going to work. How do you reach out and find the right person?
Yeah, it's really hard. I mean, it's for me, it's really easy to say that because I've been really fortunate. I've had some phenomenal mentors from day one, and I don't take that for granted, you know, for a second. But I think that's where you need to start investing in doing good courses run by good people. Look at, you know, education that's run through tertiary institutions. And learn how to read the literature, because at the end of the day, that's what works. That's what's tried and tested. It's not going to stand up if you go, hey, Brad did this on, you know, Instagram, so that's why I did it. That's not the right way to do things. So I think it's, yeah, reach out to people that you already know. You know, there's probably someone in your life you already know. Have a group like, you know, what we've got of people who are in the same position, the same journey as you. But then, yeah, speak to your bosses and speak to people you're working for, working with, who've done it for longer. There's always something to learn. But then, you know, for me, it all started from textbooks, reading literature. You know, I bought thousands of dollars of textbooks when I graduated. You know, it was weird. I bought more textbooks after I graduated because I had, I guess, money. So I was like, okay, well, now I know what I like. I'm just going to go buy all the textbooks on that topic and then I'm just going to try and read them. And I guess for me, that was one part of my learning. But then a lot of what shaped who I am now is what I did through my master's at King's. Like the people I met there and the people who taught me, it's like foundational to what I do day in, day out. So I think it's important to sort of invest in the right CPD early. But, you know, the advice I always give is just start with books. Like, yeah, the books might be a few years old and they come out of the literature might be a little bit dated, but that stuff works. That's what's in print. That's what's published.
Yeah, that's a good point. Not a lot of people are talking about that. You know, getting textbooks, going traditionally, like learning the fundamentals in textbooks first and then spending your money on CPD. Do you guys have advice for graduates if they're coming out and where they should focus early on? Aidan, what did you do first?
What I would really suggest is that you look for a specialist, someone who is well-educated, or someone who is a point of authority, and seek them out and go and observe them, go and chat to them, try and find out if they're the sort of person that will give you the time of day that you can learn from. So for me, that's what I tried to do. And I was obviously very blessed that it worked out that way, that I could learn from someone and be mentored by them. But I've done, you know, after I've been learning a bit from one specialist, I've been talking to other ones, Perio's, Pros, MaxFax, and just trying to learn a little bit from everyone. And you'll find quickly that some people don't want to spend, you know, the time with you, and other people will give you the time of day. And it's those people that, you know, you've got to just spend time with and learn from them, you know, what works for them and see if it works for you and things like that. But I think for me, it's like, hands-on and seeing what they do as well as doing the evidence-based, tertiary education side of things.
So hands-on like courses or hands-on like going to the specialist and, you know, watching a case?
Yeah, sorry, I should say that better. Yeah, going on and watching their cases, but also if they give you the opportunity to help with their cases, maybe you nurse for them. Mm. Maybe while someone's doing, you know, an implant, you scrub it and you nurse for them and you can watch then and there how things are done.
David, what do you think about that? What did you focus on early on with your, you know, CPD, and, you know, what would you recommend to graduates?
I think we all graduate with an idea of what we'd like to do. And I think there's a reason why they say you shouldn't specialize within the first 2 years of post-graduation, because you'll find that once you've immersed yourself in a particular discipline, that your thoughts on that discipline may change. So for me, my interest early on was ortho. I was working in a practice that offered kind of a little bit of everything. We had wisdom teeth, we had implant surgery, we had full mouth recons, we had ortho. And I think I thought it was the perfect environment to learn. I think 3 or 4 months into the job, I realized that I was learning a lot of things that I shouldn't be doing. So you kind of learn what not to do. And I think when we graduate, we're very, very naive in the sense of what real dentistry actually is. When we graduate, we've got a lot of knowledge because we've just sat our final exams. We've had to learn a lot of theory. And when you're thrown into the deep end of everyday dentistry, you can kind of be swayed into certain directions, especially if you've got employers that have another agenda and that sort of thing. So I think one of the things I struggled with initially is to be able to say no for things that I didn't feel were, whether it be ethical or just appropriate treatment for a particular patient. So when I did start to do a little bit of ortho training, the practice that I was working in was doing ortho that, you know, it kind of didn't line up with where I was, with what I was learning. And it didn't mean that it was wrong, but it just meant that I wasn't comfortable to kind of do that type of orthodontic treatment, for example. So it was a bit of a struggle to be able to convince the practice owner, you know, to outlay certain materials and that sort of thing. But eventually, I think they saw the persistence and that you actually did want to do what you felt was best for your patients. And it wasn't just, you know, I want this for no reason whatsoever. It was for the purpose of delivering good, high quality dentistry. So I was in that.
Do you have any advice for dealing with that if you're in that situation? So graduates end up in that situation fairly frequently, I would think. How did you go about dealing with that?
Look, it's quite tough. I think it really depends on what you're kind of asking for. I think it also depends on the employer and whether or not you're going to be there long term. So for me, I knew this practice. I had a few friends that work there. So I thought, you know, my friends have been there for 3 or 4 years. So the turnover of the dentist isn't as frequent as what you hear on in other practices. So I felt comfortable to approach the owner and say, look, you know, I'm in it for the long term. I want to do what's best for the patients. This is what I'm learning. I've invested X amount of money into CPD. So this is coming from a place of, you know, genuinely wanting to provide what was best for the patient. A lot of the times, like this was a group practice with 22 dentists working across 2 locations. So you can imagine that every man and his opinion was present every single day. So that can be good and bad because you become bombarded with a lot of opinions on how you should do certain things, and you do one thing and it disagrees with another person. So what I found that it can actually be quite confusing. And sometimes I end up doing nothing because I just didn't want to do what was wrong by the patient by following one person's advice. As what Barat was saying, I think once you've done some tertiary education, you develop that mind to critically think. That was the one thing that I really did get out of my master's program. It was to be able, not just the knowledge, but it was to be able to critically think and evaluate what was presented to you. So, you know, when a company comes and presents you a material and they say this is the best material on the market, you don't just take it at face value. You critically analyze what's presented in front of you, whether it's from an implant company, from another dentist, or something that you saw on social media. It's really important that you critically evaluate what's presented to you, because end of the day, we need to be practicing something that is evidence-based, and it needs to make logical and biological sense to you. So it can be quite tough as a new graduate, and I've seen a couple of new graduates who've messaged me and struggled with this type of thing, because sometimes you're really not in a position to kind of bite the hand that feeds you. And standing up can mean that, you know, you develop a bad relationship or things start to sour with your employer.
Yeah, it's definitely a delicate thing to manage, and I guess every situation's different. So, I guess people in that situation, they'd have to deal with it in their own way. Has anyone else experienced that kind of thing where you thought, you know, so there's certain things in the initial practice you're in that you wanted to change?
Yeah, I think in my first practice, you know, there was a culture of sort of, because it was a preferred provider practice as well, I think there was a culture of perhaps exaggerating the number of surfaces that you would put through, you know, just for the health fund rebate and that sort of thing. for me, you know, I couldn't do that. You know, it wasn't explicitly encouraged, but it was an expectation that, you know, you would be doing that. Look, I think if there are ethical issues at play, the best thing you can do is just get out. You know, you can't change, depending on how deep that culture runs, you know, you can't change a culture as an associate, to be honest. So, you know, my recommendation would be is if it's a minor thing where you think, you know, obviously go ahead and try and communicate, you know, your concerns and, you know, see if there are going to be any improvements there. But if it's not going to change and it's a deep lying issue, just get out while you can.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think the people in that kind of situation would recognize it and can make that call, I guess, which is what you did. So guys, let's change topic a little bit. You guys all do some fairly complex dentistry, but you all have your own little areas of interest, I would say. Tell us, like, why do you have these areas of interest and what sparked them, I guess? David, you do a fair bit of surgery, you were saying. How'd you end up down that path?
I think from my last couple of years of uni, I think I really enjoyed the oral surgery discipline and the oral surgery module at uni. I tried to get a lot more out of the surgical professors and lecturers that we had. So I spent a lot of time with them outside of uni hours, observing cases in the professional suites and spending a lot of time finding out, you know, whether this is something that I really wanted to pursue. I also did enjoy, like I mentioned earlier, ortho, but ultimately I think what I wanted to end up doing was a little bit more surgery. So I think immersing yourself in that discipline, by surrounding yourself with those kind of people really does shape your direction. I remember one thing Bharat said to me once when I first graduated was, you know, if you want to know something about a particular discipline, message the person who can answer that question. You know, we often can get tempted to post things online on DPR or whatever it is, and we get all these opinions from all these different people. You know, if I want to know something about, you know, an anterior composite or adhesive aesthetic dentistry, Bharat or Johan are the two guys that I'm messaging. If I want to know something about, you know, I'm struggling with a patient when it comes to communication or how to get a thought process across to a patient, Aiden's the first person I'm messaging, you know. So when you find yourself doing something that you love, you find yourself giving it all the time and all your effort and really wanting to do what's best and being harsh with yourself when it comes to critically evaluating your cases within that specific field. So for surgery, for example, the first thing I look at when I've completed a case is not what went right, is I really try to look at what went wrong and how I can actually improve these small minor things that might not break the case, but can just take that case to the next level. And getting somebody who also has that kind of eye for that particular discipline to critically evaluate your work as well. One, it keeps you accountable because you're not just accepting, you know, what you think is good, but you're also getting that feedback from somebody who's coming from a good place to tell you, look, you know, you did the right thing, or I think, you know, if you looked at it from this point of view or changed this little part of the procedure, it would have been that much better. And you take that on board. And one thing my old boss said to me was, you're only as good as your last surgery, or you're only as good as the last filling that you've done. So if the last surgery wasn't as good as you'd hoped, then focus on making the next one that much better.
Do you have a formal way of doing that? Like, do you always every time reevaluate your cases, or is it a bit more as it comes, I guess?
So in the past, working in Townsville was a bit challenging sometimes because you've got patients that are coming from 10 hours away or 8 hours away because they've just got no one else in the area. So I had a couple of cases where, you know, I documented the cases and I dismissed the patient. And the patient's, you know, an hour and a half away from the practice, and I'm reviewing the photos at the end of the day and realize, okay, I've left a suture behind that should have been done a different way, or I kind of did something incorrectly and I need to call the patient to come back. So what I kind of adopted is that at the end of every case, particularly when it comes to surgery, I'll seat the patient in the waiting room, review all my photos from start to finish on a large screen, and that's the best time that I can make changes. That's the best time that I can correct things because the patient's still numb, the patient's still there, and the patient will probably appreciate you making those changes and realizing, okay, I need to make an adjustment or I need to correct what I've done then and there. So that's one little thing that I did adopt, purely because I was in an area where I was very, very far from patients at times. And I think it's something that can probably apply to each and every discipline. It starts with documentation though. I mean, there's no point in keeping the patient in the waiting room if you haven't taken the photos or if you haven't, you know, taken that final x-ray to evaluate whether your restoration's seated or whether your implant's in the correct position or whatever it is. So.
Do you all do that in a similar way? I know you all document your cases. Do you review them straight away or do some of you do it after hours?
Yeah, I'll typically review everything at the end of the day, probably once I get home. I'll just have a look at anything that, you know, I should be sort of worried about, you know.
I thought you put it on Instagram first and review it afterwards.
Yeah, I do.
Wait for other people to review it first and delete it.
I didn't say how I review, right?
Johan will also send me a case and say, David, would you froth over this case?
Getting David to do your assessment.
He clearly has a good eye, right? He gets off on getting reposts from like periodontology world and all that sort of thing. He'll be like, mate, last week I got 5 reposts. Oh, I'm so proud of myself.
The Instagram bar, fair enough. So you're saying, David, you mentioned Aiden's intercommunication. That's something that you're fairly strong at. Aiden. Is that something you focused on early on, or has it come naturally?
I've watched a few people who are good communicators, and I at the start of my practice, like at the start of my practicing, like career, the first year out, I started at a place where I didn't have many patients, so I really slowly built my patient base. So something that I was going to say earlier is in that first year, I spent like 50% of my time, like legit time, actually in the lab and, 40% watching my principal and then 10% seeing patients. It was bizarre, but I think that actually really benefited me because I saw the lab side of things. I saw how you need to communicate, how clinicians need to communicate to a lab, and how that's really important. And then also observing someone who is a really good communicator, I think that also helped me. And doing some courses here and there, going over to Seattle and seeing John Coyce and doing his treatment planning course was really good. I thought that helped refine my communication to becoming more succinct so that I'm not baffling patients and I'm not overwhelming them, which I think a lot of dentists do. They give way too much information or they're not reading the person properly as they deliver the information, and that's critical to having case acceptance and to having your patients understand what you're actually talking about.
Yeah, they're definitely mistakes a lot of graduates make. Speaking too much is pretty common. All right, let's move on. Barrett, you do a fair bit of alignment or Invisalign. You do some lectures for them as well, but it's something you're passionate about. We're talking about before we started recording minimally invasive dentistry, and that's the foundation of it. How did you get into that?
Look, to be honest, when I started doing the master's in aesthetic dentistry, it was probably a little bit misguided why I did it. I guess most of your listeners are in Australia, but the Gold Coast is renowned for everything being a little bit faker, a little bit bigger, a little bit more artificial.
It's Hollywood, yeah.
I sort of thought, I'll be a cosmetic dentist, and that term really, really grinds my gears a lot now. But, I went in thinking I was going to learn heaps about doing veneers and cutting teeth. And to be honest, like my whole philosophy on cosmetics completely changed to the point where I hate that term. Cosmetic dentistry, it just doesn't come out of my mouth. It's not something I'd ever aspire to be. In fact, nothing grinds my gears more than seeing like new grads who claim to be cosmetic dentists and reconstructive dentists. It's not something aspirational. Like aesthetic dentistry is what we should be aspiring to, and that's where minimally invasive dentistry is synonymous with aesthetic dentistry, stuff that's going to last a long time, that looks appropriate, and is considerate of like biological tissue and the patient that's sort of attached to those teeth there. So for me, fundamentally, a lot of minimally invasive dentistry requires some sort of interdisciplinary treatment planning where you combine all the disciplines And often the core of that is putting the teeth in a better position to start with, and then employing all of those adjunct treatments around it to sort of supplement and augment it. And I tell my patients that, you know, your teeth are going to be just a better version of what you had before. It's not going to be a whole new set of teeth. You know, it's something that's going to, you know, sort of complement what you've got. So, yeah, I think alignment is such a big part of that. You know, whether you do your own alignment or work with, you know, even though I speak for Invisalign a lot, I still work with some amazing orthodontists. Whether or not you're doing it yourself, you need to be able to diagnose appropriately and figure out where that's required and be able to communicate effectively with those people around you, going to help you with those interdisciplinary treatment plans. So for me, you know, even if you're not doing your own alignment, you're not confident doing it, speak to the people who are doing it for you and tell them what you can bring to the table. You know, plan those cases before you start, those peg lateral cases. Tell them how much space you want. Where do you want the spaces? Where should it be, mesial or distal? And I think that's just the foundations of good aesthetic dentistry is just, yeah, being able to sort of diagnose appropriately, communicate that effectively, like Aiden was saying, and then execute it as you should.
Yeah, it's a complete paradigm shift from, you know, cosmetic dentistry used to be cut teeth and put porcelain on top, and now it's aligned teeth and perhaps when you need it, porcelain, or when you most often can do it with composite. So it's so much more minimally
invasive. We've got two cosmetic dentists right in this group here, Dave. If you check out Instagram, we've got David Atiyah and Aiden, two self-proclaimed cosmetic Sydney dentists.
Johan's keeping everyone honest in the background here. Cosmetic dentist, for the audience.
Cosmetic dentist to the stars, some would call us, but, you know.
So obviously you guys spend a lot of time, like we got to at the start, you're spending a lot of time, you're documenting your cases, but you're also sharing your cases. You're trying to bring in some educational parts to that as well. Why are you guys doing this? Like what do you see the future being with this, and what kind of influence are you wanting to have?
I think one part of it really, David, is the fact that there's a lot of bad information out there as well. You know, I think I've learned that the hard way, where there's quite low quality information out there, you know, and I hope that the four of us, you know, we try and come across as being genuine and, you know, we try and share good information with people on social media. And I think the whole, you know, the whole concept of us being active on social media and sharing our stuff was that at least we can, you know, keep ourselves accountable and at least be one source of, you know, some information. And we can show people how we believe the industry should be done. Because I think because there is a lot of misinformation on social media, you know, you can get into the habit of getting an unrealistic view of what dentistry should be. You know, we're all four of us are, you know, still in private practice in sort of major cities around Australia. So we're doing bread and butter, you know, daily dentistry, and we're trying to achieve a quality, you know, that is somewhat acceptable at the same time. So I guess it's just our way of showing, you know, what, you know, our journeys in clinical practice. When I don't think, well, for me, I never sort of promote myself as being, you know, a guru or a master of anything. It's just my journey, you know, in trying to become better every single day. And I think that would probably be the same for the other three boys, except for Bharat, who is a master, a true guru of a line, bleach and bond.
I love how you and always manage to get like a decent sentence out of your mouth and have to ruin it with that. Yeah. I was like, oh, I agree with you for once in my life. This is good. I think for me, a lot of it, and this is something that's taken me, I think, a while to understand my relationship with dentistry. I think a lot of it comes back to like purpose. And for me, dentistry has given me so much in terms of, you know, satisfaction and, you know, job satisfaction and, you know, what finding what I'm passionate about. And I think a lot of it has now shifted to like what my purpose is. And I genuinely believe, and the other boys I don't think would sort of go on record saying this, but I think our purpose really is to hopefully somewhat shape the way dentistry, I mean, we're the young future of dentistry in Australia, all of us, you know, collectively, everyone who listens to your podcast, yourself included, we're the future of dentistry. And I think if we want to be in a position to influence the way dentistry is practiced in the future, then we've got to use whatever medium's available. And I think these days, the truth is social media is one of the most widely digestible forms of that, you know, information pathway for clinicians. So if we're not present there, then we have no chance of being able to shape the way we want to see dentistry go. And I think that really comes back to one of my core purposes of why I'm really here, is to hopefully not only practice good dentistry and give my patients good dentistry and provide for my family with everything that comes from that, but it's also to hopefully influence the way dentistry is practiced in the future. And I really hope we have some minute impact on that going forward. So that's a big part of why I do what we do. And I think the boys definitely agree with that. They just wouldn't say it out loud.
Yeah, I think a big part of it is, and I think you have the same mission, David, where, it's about changing the culture a little bit, making sure everyone's a little bit more collegial with each other and hopefully have a better profession long term. Because, in some respects, I think, I'm sure you hear a lot of young grads coming out and becoming very disillusioned with dentistry, as a career choice and, what may be associated with, the daily clinical life. And I think it's very, I think it's important for each of us to do our little part if we are in a position to do so. If we can sort of help and inspire one person, and make their career, better, at least for the short term, then I think that's, that's a big goal that's achieved.
Yeah, there's no doubt. Dentistry is kind of tough, and for graduates, it can be a little isolating at the start. It can be a real challenge, and I think having that collegial aspect to dentistry and as a group going through it, as opposed to little islands of practices that are all separate, I think really helps people psychologically as much as anything else. So Barrett, you touched on that you want to see a change, you want to see you want to influence that change.
I think it's exactly what Johan was saying, that sort of degree of collegiality often, and this sort of goes back to, we've all seen it on online forums where, we're sort of so quick to, shoot someone down or put someone down about something they've posted or something they've said or disagree so vehemently that it becomes so argumentative. I think we're all on the same journey. We have to acknowledge that dentistry is really hard. And we've all been there as new grads when it sucked. And that roller coaster of being a new grad is like tumultuous. Like it sucks for you, your family, and everyone around you. And for me, if we can sort of change the way that we all not only interact with one another, but beyond that, I think from the way dentistry is practiced, and it goes back to that whole philosophy that I spoke about, that cosmetics versus aesthetics, I really hope that, getting that sort of message out there that it's not about sort of cutting teeth just for the sake of it, or coming across as some mad dog cosmetic dentist who's like, God's gift to, helping everyone have amazing smiles. It's not about that. It's about, your core purpose is to help people. And if the byproduct of that is they have more confidence in the smile and better teeth as a result of it, that's my philosophy. That's hopefully my message that will come across. And I know a lot of people share that's not unique. That's not something brand new. But I think if more people voice it, and if more people are able to voice it in a way that more people can understand it and relate to it, and I think as young clinicians we have that opportunity to do that, I'm all for it. Like I'll put everything I can into it to get that message across.
For sure. Aidan, David, do you have the same, does that resonate with you, and do you have any comments to add to that?
I would say that from my point of view, dentistry being so isolating, we, as Barrett said, we can often be quick to judge people, quick to shut people down, and quick to shut people off and out. I think that we have the opportunity now that we're all so well connected to not only meet on social media, but I think it's important that we meet in person as well, that we have the opportunity to meet together, have study clubs, have opportunities to put our guards down and learn from each other. We shouldn't be seeing each other as competitors. And I think that's difficult to do sometimes because, dentistry is a business, but we need to be able to meet in a way where we're not competitors and where we're trying to learn from each other. And we're trying to learn from people that have more experience than us. Like learning from people like Brat, who is, got twice the experience of, myself, for example, and has been a big inspiration. I remember probably 3 years ago now hearing him talk, was it maybe 4 years ago? Maybe one of your first talks, Brad, and just being totally inspired by his kind of approach. So I think that if we can have more in person, not only online situations where we have the opportunity to learn from each other, like that. I think that's something that, you know, is really important to encourage.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a pretty important step as well. Are you guys planning to make that change? As in, you know, setting up or facilitating that kind of in-person thing, study clubs or anything like that?
It's something we've talked about, I think, for a while, probably for the past couple of years since that forum that we created on Facebook got up and running. We ran one study club, which, you know, got a fair bit of feedback from new and recent graduates. And I think it's something that really should probably be provided. It's probably something that we didn't have when we first graduated. And I think one thing as a new grad that you often come out with is you want to see where you're going to be in the next 5 years. So I feel like because we've only, you know, we graduated 4 or 5 years ago, Barat's a little bit older, but people can kind of see where they're, you know, where they want to head, and it can kind of see, well, in 5 years' time, I could be doing this type of dentistry, or I could be doing this type of work, or I could be doing this type of education and that sort of thing. I think one thing that does fuel and kind of guide that is being able to kind of put your failures on display, which is hard. When you have cases that don't go according to plan and you find yourself, you know, sitting with a patient and kind of trying to explain what went wrong, it can really humble you and bring you back to reality that not all cases do go to plan. And documenting your cases is probably harder than documenting your failures, I should say, probably harder than documenting your successes, because you're sitting there and you're taking a snapshot of exactly what didn't go according to plan. And then you're trying to compute in your mind what went wrong and how it can improve. And sharing that in a forum or a closed group, like a study club or a group of friends who do want what's best for you, really can provide a medium where the shift from dentistry can focus from just cutting each other at the knees to really building each other up and providing each other with the feedback that can really help your colleagues grow and develop. So I think that's something that we really should explore.
Mm-hmm. I think we'd be pretty keen to get some feedback from your listeners if they sort of resonate with some of our philosophies and what we're trying to get across. Mm. If they'd be keen for us to get something off the ground. Obviously, it's a lot of effort and work for us to do that. We'd be super keen to do it if there's some value to be had for the greater, you know, the greater sort of dental population. We'd be super keen.
Well, that's pretty good a call out to the audience. So definitely, if you guys are listening right now, if you're driving, preferably just take a note in your head. But message these guys. Message me. I'll pass it on, whichever way you want. But get in contact and definitely reach out, because it'd be cool to see this kind of thing getting off the ground. We live in a different world now where we can take photos of our work. We can focus so on the minor details that we probably couldn't back when we couldn't take photos like this. So we can share that. We can learn from it much quicker than perhaps people could in the past. So you can go from being a graduate to at the level of some of these guys pretty quick, which is very inspirational.
Just on that, we can be fooled by what we see on social media.
For sure.
Social media is just a snapshot in what happens in a particular case or in a particular person's week. And often people post what they want you to see, not what really happens. So with social media, you see a lot of aesthetic dentistry, you see a lot of really, really nice cases. What you don't see is the failures that happened to get this person to a point where they can execute said procedure in a particular way to be able to post it. So behind every successful case that you see is probably a whole closet full of skeletons where things didn't go according to plan. And that person who's posted that successful case has been shaped by all those failures. I know when I'm presenting or I'm giving a lecture, 95% of the lecture is failures or cases that didn't go the way I'd wanted them to go. And sort of my take on what went wrong and what I took from it and how I improved to maybe resurrect the case or save the case or improve on the next one. So social media can be deceiving, and we can actually be part of the problem. Because of how we want to present ourselves. So it's important to take everything that you see with a grain of salt. Our cases, any other cases, there's a lot of blood, sweat, and tears that's gone behind the successful cases, and most of that is unsuccessful cases. A lot of the good judgment that we have comes from experience, and most of that experience has come from bad judgment the past.
That's right. You can't learn it overnight without having, without experiencing those difficult cases and going through that. That's really good advice, David, and I appreciate you sharing it. So you guys have got a few followers on things like Instagram. I'm sure you get a lot of people reaching out to you. Is there questions that people ask a lot, or is there things people do that, I don't know, the way they ask things, like how do you expect people to reach out to you guys? And is it okay? Do you want people reaching out?
I love it when people reach out to me. But I think there is a way, you know, to really interact with people. You know, I think it's like you don't go up to someone randomly on the street and say, you know, what is that? You would say, hi, how are you? So I think, you know, the general rules of, you know, social etiquette apply on social media as well, as the name implies. I think also, you know, the one thing that I'll put out there as well is that one of the most common questions I get is, you know, what Teflon is that? What wedge is that? What bond is that? What composite is that? Basically, they want to know my stock list for my practice. And the thing I would say is, look, I'm more than happy to share, but it's not the, you know, the shade of composite that I'm using or the exact instrument that I'm using that is, you know, helping us get these results. You know, there's been a lot of effort that's gone, you know, gone into everything. And for people to think, you know, to ask that question and say, is it just because that wedge that's made you achieve that result? I find that that sometimes can be a little bit insulting. So I think it's just about social etiquette. Think about what you say, before you say it. I think that would be my main message. What do you other guys have anything to add?
No. I agree 100%. I think that's really important. But I think it also comes down to experience as well, because people who maybe are a bit less experienced will often ask questions like that, like, what composite are you using? Because they don't appreciate that it's the technique that got you there, or that what you learnt and what process you underwent. But it's a tricky one, you know. You get lobbed with questions like that sometimes, and they can come across almost as rude, you know. So I think, you know, you have to treat people like you would treat them in real life, you know, in real life. I think that's important.
It's pretty common on the internet for people to just throw all those kinds of manners out the window, for sure. Is there general questions you get, not specifics about cases, but a more general question that you might get quite often that you think people would want to hear the answer to on a podcast?
I get asked very often what courses I would recommend doing after graduating. For me, I usually say that I think I benefited a lot from Derek's course, the mini residency. I think it gave me an appreciation for breathing, for anatomy, and for development as basics, that things that I really didn't touch on, certain things I didn't touch on at uni, amongst the orthodontics. But also the postgraduate diploma at Sydney is something that I really recommend.
Yeah, I think Johan and I probably get asked a lot about the King's program because it's quite accessible for Australian dentists. And it's, I think with any postgraduate training, it's always difficult to really quantify sort of the, you know, you look at course and you go, what's the ROI on it? It's hard to quantify sort of, you know, what it's going to do for you personally. But my general sort of answer to that always is, hey, look, if this is, you know, if you're at that sort of crossroads in your career, you want some structured guided learning and you're interested in learning the evidence and the literature behind why we do what we do, then yeah, look, 100% go for some form of, you know, follow-up, some tertiary education, because that's, yeah, it's sort of invaluable. But if you're just looking at sort of, you know, hands-on building skills, you know, getting instant sort of return on investment, then there's, you know, plenty of courses out there that you can do as well. So I guess it's not for everyone. I guess you just got to figure out what kind of clinician you want to be long-term, what you want to get out of it. But at the end of the day, I think it really is for everyone. If you want to have a long, sort of sustainable, rewarding, and satisfying career, to sort of learn why we do what we do. So yeah, I'd always recommend it when people ask me that.
I think you also need to ask yourself why you want to do that particular course. So I often answer that question with the question is, you know, what do you want to get out of it? And I've had a fair few people asking about, for example, the MSc in Germany, and it's kind of like, well, why do you want to do it? I've had responses ranging from, oh, I want to get some letters behind my name, so if something goes wrong, I can be protected against APRA, for example. That's not a motivation to do a postgraduate course. It's not, mind you, that's not going to protect you from anything. But it's certainly important to know the motivation, because what happens is when you enroll into these programs, they get quite intense during when it comes to assessments, when it comes to requirements and that sort of thing. And you can either hate the discipline because you've made the wrong decision to take a course that is very, very demanding from a time as well as financial point of view, or you might find yourself just, you know, scraping through for the sake of finishing it and getting the letters or whatever it is. So it's important to have an idea of what direction you want to head. Similar to what Johan said, stay in your lane, look at where you want to be, and kind of find the people that will help facilitate that for you and do the courses that will help springboard you down that same direction of where you want to end up.
That's some good advice. And a theme for you guys has been that postgraduate and structured learning. So it's certainly something that I think a lot of people can benefit from. So we posted this on Facebook just before we started, asking for some questions from, on Instagram as well, asking for some questions from the audience. And we've got one from GURPS, Chev Diva. What would you do differently if you had just come out of dental school? Let's all mention something, or you guys, not me, that you would have done differently just out of dental school to get you to where you are either quicker or better. Brad, what would you change?
So I'd probably spend more time shadowing clinicians with more experience than me. I think there's nothing more valuable than seeing it being done firsthand. And, you know, being where we are in our practice now, the fact that we all sort of get in and watch each other and, you know, literally encourage observation. If I had that when I graduated, I think that would have been absolutely phenomenal.
Would you book time aside like daily or weekly or something?
It doesn't have to be even that frequent. You know, even once a month, if there's a case of interest, you know, go in there, watch it,
yep.
You know, ask questions, take notes, go back, you know, read more about it. I think that would be something I'd do more of. I didn't do enough of that in my first few years. I was just too busy being a dentist.
Yeah, I actually resonate with that. Being early on, I did a lot of observation, and I was a dental assistant for years before, but then I got stuck into the dentistry and was fully booked and didn't do it anymore. And I think that was actually a mistake. So that's a really good one. David, what would you change?
I think I probably would have started to document my cases a little bit earlier. One thing that did get me into documentation was taking up Derek's orthodontic residency, mostly for the fear of cases not going to plan and making sure that you have the appropriate records. But I completely resonate with Barat said. I mean, in my first year and a half, I was in a clinic where, like I said, I learned a lot more of what not to do versus what to do. In my second job up in Townsville, I was fortunate to be able to block off that time and really observe the principal dentist in surgical cases that I had an interest in or that I had referred in-house so that I was able to go and observe that. And I think if I could have done that earlier on in my career, I think, you know, the direction probably, I would have probably headed in the same direction, but we never know. It may have been a quicker journey or I may have learned a lot more things along the way. But I think, yeah, definitely agree with what Brad said and some documentation earlier on.
Yeah, that's really good tip. Aidan, what would you change?
I would probably say that it's important not to get a big head too fast. Probably similar to what Johan said. I think about
speaking from experience.
About 11. I think just about 11 months in, I was sat down and I was asked why I thought I was so good, because I think at that stage I thought I was the shit and I thought I was so good at what I did. And looking back.
Isn't that still the case, Aiden?
Come on, man.
Aren't you still the shit, Aiden?
Yeah, now I am, but that was then.
Johan's a troublemaker, I noticed.
Yeah. So, no, I honestly think that, like, it was – I was sat down and I was told to be more humble and not to have such a big head. And I think that when I got told that, I realized that I needed to take a step back and appreciate that I wasn't that great and that I needed to step my game up and learn more and be more humble.
Yeah, well, that's it takes a lot of courage to actually take that advice on and change to where you have now. So it's pretty impressive, actually. Johan, we've asked you this before, but shoot something that you would change early on to get you to where you are faster or better.
Yeah, I think humility would be a big thing. You know, I think it's that whole concept of being able to take feedback. It's not, and the other thing would be that it probably not something I would necessarily change, but you know, I would probably have thought a lot more about going to practice ownership so early as well. I think in some respects it's been a great learning opportunity. It's forced me to upskill much quicker, but at the same time, in some respects, I feel as though it's probably been a hindrance to purely focusing on my education as well. So as I said, not something that I would change, but probably something that I would have given a lot more thought at the time.
Yeah, definitely. It divides your time, right? You're wearing two hats now. So it's different for sure. I'm lucky enough, I don't own a practice. I'm an associate, but then I started a podcast and had a baby at the same time. And it's all a bit of fun. So we've got another question from Law Doa on Instagram. How do you handle different schools of thought? So like if you have, there's a situation where there's two differing opinions, let's say, TMJ is a good one, but there's lots of different things. How do you guys handle that? You're all people who have done postgraduate work as well.
I think it goes back to what we were saying before about critical thinking. I think one thing I liked about the program that I did is that it wasn't a sponsored program. So they were able to bring any speakers that they wanted to speak on any topics that they desired. And the first lecture what we had was on critical thinking, is that, you know, you'll get one person that steps up and teaches you how to do this procedure in a particular way. And then the next guy immediately after will teach you the same procedure in a very, very different way. So to be able to critically evaluate, number one, the literature, number two, the credibility of who's giving you the advice or teaching you that particular school of thought. And then you need to critically evaluate yourself as a clinician. You need to critically evaluate your skill set and whether or not it lines up or is on par with the procedure that you want to do, or whether it lies with what the patient actually needs. So being able to critically evaluate those three or four things, I think really should answer the question on, should I be doing this particular technique this way, or should I be seeking more advice, or should I spend more time researching or find a course that will teach me a particular way that may work a little bit better in my hands.
I think David nailed it. You have to go back to the evidence, and that's unfortunately all we have in dentistry is the evidence. You know, people talk about how poor the quality of the literature is in dentistry, and they, you know, use that sort of as a bit of an excuse to do whatever. But I think at the end of the day, if we don't have the evidence, we don't have anything. So if you feel like you're conflicted in your approach, then look at the evidence. Make sure that you're ticking those core fundamental checkpoints of what the evidence suggests on how to manage a case like that. Because if you can check those off, what's in the literature has been there for a long, long time. It's worked. And exactly what David said, if you can't do that and you are confused or conflicted on how to approach it at that point there, find someone who has either a better appreciation of the literature, more experience, or better technical skills to be able to execute that. So I think that's so fundamental to what we do. And that just goes back to, you know, when you look at schools of thoughts, where are those schools of thoughts coming from? Is it two people on Instagram who are telling you how to do something differently? That's not two schools of thoughts. That's, you know, two people on Instagram just giving you their opinion.
Yeah, that's a really good point as well. I think you guys nailed that that question for sure. I'm going to ask one. This one's from me. I like to ask everyone this kind of thing. But and you can all put in your own little bit if you want. But imagine you could get in the ear of every single dental graduate right now, every student. You could teach them one thing. You could really enforce one opinion of yours that you think they should focus on or they think they should know. What would you guys be telling new graduates now and students?
I think it's important to tell them to slow down. Do not try and run before you can walk or crawl. Seriously.
Yeah.
I think all of us have probably learned that the hard way. And I think that's a very important thing to consider, is start with your basics, start with your treatment planning, your documentation, your basic composites. Don't jump into doing rehabs. Don't jump into doing crazy things. Learn from those who know more than you and play it safe.
I was going to say the same thing. You got to crawl before you ball, right? Like that's literally what it is. Like you can't just go in there and start doing crazy stuff day one. And that's not the expectation. Your patients don't expect you to do that. And I think the fear is, you know, when I graduated, I'd always worry about, can someone else, should I be able to do this because I'm a dentist now? And there was always that little fear of, if I don't do this, am I going to be judged because I can't do it? That's not the case. No one's judging you. People will judge you when you do something you shouldn't be doing and you get it wrong. Like that's far worse. So, yeah, know your limitations. And, yeah, 100%. Like Kanye says, gotta crawl before you ball, right?
I think following on from that as well, I think following on from that, one big thing is to run your own race. You know, you can run at the beginning, but, you know, I think the most important thing is not to compare yourself to your peers. Just because one guy is doing ortho and implants and another guy is off doing full mouth rehab doesn't mean that you need to be doing that same thing. So I think stay within your comfort zone, make sure you're committed to excellence, you know, find a good group of people and just, you know, and you know, don't necessarily just try and imitate other people, you know, be creative, be original, you know, and just run your own race. And in due time, you know, good things will come.
Yeah, I think there's some fantastic advice there for graduates and students, definitely things that people should take on board. And I want to say thank you guys so much for sharing your time with us on the podcast. And thank you for sharing your cases on Instagram. Obviously, we've got a really good idea of how you guys think about this now and how we should be looking at cases, all different cases, and thinking about the literature and everything else. So I really appreciate you guys sharing the time with us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us, Dave.
I'm back. Awesome chat with those guys. I really appreciate their time. There's so much value in there. I'm sure you got a lot from it. I hope you did. I'd love to hear what you liked. If you want to see some of their awesome cases, check them out on Instagram. You can find their handles in the show notes, of course. So now we've got the Prime Head Start segment. It's proudly brought to you by Prime Practice. This segment is every episode. There's bite-sized anecdotes they didn't teach you in dental school. So welcome to the Prime Head Start segment. This is proudly brought to you by Prime Practice. And today we're lucky enough to speak with Brett Chernin. Brett's been a trainer and a coach with Prime Practice for 16 years, and he's now their general manager of customer relationships. How are you today, Brett?
Excellent. Thanks, mate.
So we've got an interesting topic today. We learn a lot at dental school, but it doesn't have the time to teach us everything. One thing they did cover was you probably shouldn't go to bed with your patients, but I've heard Prime Practice say that.
We actually advocate it, you know, like we say, no, go to bed with your patients.
Yeah, okay.
Which I guess might be exciting with if you think of some patients and really, you know,
not
might
so
turn you off with some other patients. No. So the acronym is a great acronym because, first of all, dentists work really well with acronyms. You know, it's like I want to remember a communications approach. This one really works really well. And we often say at PrimeSpeak that if you remember anything about PrimeSpeak, this is the one that you want to walk away with.
Mm.
And the bedding of patients stands for building trust, exposing conditions, and deepening concerns. And that really tells the story of how PrimeSpeak works and the impact that it has when you're communicating with your patients. You know, so it's not just about relationship. It's also about bridging the gap between what patients think they need and what the dentist thinks they need. And that's the exposing conditions and deepening concerns part of it.
So this is something that's pretty important in the new patient exam, or is it something we're thinking about all the time? When are we thinking about this?
Well, we've always said that, you know, I mean, PrimeSpeak is very much focused on the 2 days is focused on the new patient exam. But we've always said that it's applicable to everyone, you know. You start with your new patients because they're fresh to you, they're new to you, you can try different things with them. Then once you get really good at it and using the skills with your new patients, then you'll start to recognize that you can use most of the tools with your existing patients. You just need to be a little bit more selective with which tools you use. And then eventually you'll get to actually see that, honestly, they're just really great communication skills for life. You know, whether you're working with using the skills with your colleagues or even, you know, it's very common for people to say that it impacts their relationships and their communication with their loved ones, you know, friends and family and work colleagues.
Yeah, absolutely. Communication's not just something we use at work. So obviously, it's critically important at work as a dentist. It's critically important in your real life. It's an important topic. So, and deepening concern, what do you mean by that?
Yeah, that's an interesting one. But if I can go back to the exposing conditions first, because it kind of leads into that, right? So the exposing conditions part, just to confirm, is the part while I was talking about bridging that gap. Very often there is a big gap between what patients think they need or want and what the dentist thinks that the patient needs. Yeah. So the exposing conditions is how do you expose conditions that are currently going on in the patient's mouth that the patient often doesn't know that they've got. And generally speaking, doesn't know that they've got because most of those conditions have either been in their mouth for a long time, so they think it's going to be in their mouth for the same amount of time, or it's not causing them any pain. And if it's not causing them any pain, then often they don't think that there's an issue, right?
Of course.
So, so we need to expose those conditions. And then the next question is, how do we motivate the patient to seek a solution and ideally seek a solution that is going to be best for the patient, most long term, and ideally the same sort of solution that the dentist would have if that was in their mouth. Optimum treatment, correct. So how do we influence the patient towards that, knowing that what's good for them is also good for the dentist, also good for the practice, but mainly it's what's best for the patient, right? So what we say in PrimeSpeak, and it's partly to do with our, you know, we've got five laws, and the first law is the law of motivation. And it's basically kind of alludes to this idea of, well, what is it that motivates people to choose a solution that is best for them? How do we motivate them? You know, and it alludes to this idea that we can either motivate people, human beings, in fact, all organisms, we're motivated away from pain and towards pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
And so we can either motivate our patients by focusing on the benefits of the solution, which is a very traditional kind of benefit selling kind of model, or we can motivate our patients by focusing on the avoidance of pain. So what is the physical pain, the financial pain, and most importantly, the emotional pain that as dentists, you guys can help people to avoid if they come back regularly, if they choose the most optimum solution.
Yeah.
And so what we look at then is, well, what's the best way to motivate them? And from our perspective, the most impactful way to motivate them is to focus on deepening their awareness or concern about the problems and where those problems might be headed, or they're just about their existing conditions, and then where those conditions might be headed should they do nothing or should they choose suboptimal treatment.
Yeah, and that's the important thing. We want them to understand their condition to make the decision for themselves, because it is their decision in their mouth.
And that's a truly informed, educated decision. And now if they make that decision and they still know they've got a certain level of awareness about what might happen, and then they still choose something suboptimal, it means you can rest easy as a dentist and say, you know what, I did my job.
Exactly. And that is our job. Well, thank you, Brett. Thank you for sharing that with the Prime Head Start segment.
Pleasure.
All right. So don't go to bed with your patients, but do build trust, expose the condition, and deepen the patient's concern. Thanks, Brett, for sharing that with us. If you follow us on Facebook or if you follow us on Instagram, you'd know there was a tagging competition recently to win a free ticket to you and the person you tagged for Prime Speak, Prime Practices Communication Course. I'm proud to announce the winners are Karen and Jennifer, DMD students from Sydney University. Congratulations. I have no doubt you'll love the course and find it valuable. I'll get you in touch with the right people soon. If you missed out, there are still discounts for Dental Head Start listeners to be had. Check out dentalheadstart.com/primeheadstart. You can get 15% off if you're a dentist, but if you're a student or just 1 year out, you can get 50% off. So check it out. I think that's pretty cool. And finally, I'm excited to announce a new project with Dr. Amit Azami. We're both on a mission to help dental students and graduates succeed in their career quicker. And now we've made a company called Foresight Dental. You can find that on Instagram and Facebook. It's in its infancy, but we're keen to get this out there. The point of it is to help dental students become better dentists quicker by focusing on some of the non-clinical things in dentistry. We're soon to release a journal that will help you stay on track, focus your time, and self-evaluate more efficiently. This will accelerate your development and get you to where you want to go quicker. This is something I found really useful myself when I was, as a student, early graduate. Keeping an eye on what you're doing by writing it down actually makes a big difference. But there's also a lot in this journal that'll teach you tips and bits and pieces we think will help. I hope you enjoy it. It's coming out perhaps late October. If you want to keep updated, check out foresightdental.com. That's for the number, sightdental.com, or the same as on Facebook or Instagram, and we'll keep you updated. A bonus about being on the social media side of that, Foresight Dental, will be a segment called Foresight Live. This is a 5 to 10 minute live stream interview with dentistry's top guns, the people who have done this already. We get the good and the bad of their early career. We find out what steps got them to where they are now, what their goals are now, and how they're going to go to the next level as well. I think that's going to be an awesome little interview section. You'll find it on Foresight Dental on Facebook Live and Instagram TV. As always, you can find all this information in the show notes on my website, dentalheadstart.com. And don't forget, listening gives water and sharing gives dental hygiene. So thanks for listening and thanks for sharing the Dental Head Start podcast.